You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wood.
And I'm Jennifer Connor.
From Equestrian Businesswomen, and you're listening to Equestrian B2B, the podcast that brings together industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and equestrians for conversations about how they build and sustain a successful business.
On today's show, we speak with social media influencer and equestrian Katie Vanslyke about how she went viral, grew her business, how she defined success, and her goal to educate and welcome people into the equestrian world.
Katie Vanslyke is a powerhouse in the equestrian and farming industries, blending her deep-rooted passion for animals with a dynamic social media presence. With over 10 million followers, she educates and entertains audiences with content that showcases the beauty of farm life, horse breeding, and the Western lifestyle. Raised on Running Springs, her family's farm in Nolensville, Tennessee, Katie grew up immersed in the world of horses and cattle. She competed in American Quarter Horse Association shows, developing an expertise in performance horse breeding that she now applies to her own breeding program. In recent years, her interest has expanded to Simmental cattle genetics, further cementing her reputation as a knowledgeable breeder and rancher.
Katie's dedication to preserving and promoting the Western way of life extends beyond the farm. As the owner of VS Code Red, a multiple world and Congress champion stallion, and more recently, First Things First, she plays a key role in shaping the future of elite quarter horse bloodlines. Her online platform not only highlights her passion for horses and cattle, but also shares the day-to-day adventures of her diverse farm family, which includes miniature Highland cows, mini donkeys, Nigerian dwarf goats, and more. An avid outdoor enthusiast, Katie collaborates with leading brands, providing authentic storytelling that resonates with her loyal following. Whether she's riding, breeding, or educating others about life on the farm, Katie Vanslyke continues to inspire and connect with those who share her love of the rural lifestyle. Equestrian Businesswomen is excited to host the second annual EQBW meetup with a party and a supporting women in business vendor market at the 2025 Saratoga Women in Business Spectacular Horse Show at White Hollow Farm in Stillwater, New York. The Saratoga Women in Business Spectacular is the first ever horse show created by women, operated by women, benefiting women's health, and showcasing businesswomen throughout the equestrian industry and beyond.
Local and equestrian women-owned businesses are welcome to participate in a vendor market, and everyone is invited to attend the meetup and party free of charge. Don't miss the opportunity to engage in a fun afternoon, support women in business, and watch fantastic competition at the Saratoga Women in Business Spectacular Show. For more information, visit www.saratogahorseshows.com.
Hi friends, Connor here. I want to take a quick minute to tell you about my new endeavor. My partner Chelsea and I have developed the first peer-to-peer equestrian clothing rental marketplace. Think Airbnb for those unused clothes sitting in your closet. It's simple. You're going to rent, ride, and return. We're excited to connect equestrian closets across the country, helping to make equestrian fashion more affordable, accessible, and sustainable. So start cleaning out those closets and make some extra horse money. Check out ridersrent.com. I'm so excited to announce today our guest. Her name's Katie Vanslyke. If you guys are asleep, then you wouldn't know her. But if you're alive, you probably have seen her all over YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, everywhere. She has an incredible amount of followers. And I am like nervous and so excited for her to be here with us today.
Don't be nervous at all. If anything, I'm nervous. Generally speaking, I'm filming my own stuff and, you know, talking and having to know what to say off the top of my head is a lot harder. It's a lot more difficult than just talking to my phone and being able to redo, you know?
Yeah. Well, we really, really appreciate you taking time out of your busy life to come on here and kind of break down and talk about your business, because I know you talk about it a little bit on your social media platforms, but we really, that's what we do here in Equestrian Businesswomen and Equestrian B2B, is talk about the business side of what's going on in people's lives. So with that, did you start out with a business plan?
Absolutely not. And honestly, I feel like my business plan, it's like fly by the seat of my pants. I do have a little bit better grasp these days, but when I started, absolutely not. I had no clue when I started growing a following that people even made money. I could not compute in my brain how posting something could equate to money. This was back in early 2017. And so I didn't make a single dime until about 6 months in. And then I had a company be like, hey, if we send you these boots and pay you $50, will you post a picture wearing them? And I'm like, that's how. Okay. And then it just kind of evolved from there.
That's so wild to think that they're just like, oh, here.
Right. It starts with one little.
And then I would say, I'm pulling these figures off the top of my head. I think I made like $2,000 from September to December. And I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. That's amazing. And then the next year I would say I made like an actual income. Like that was something that I was able to achieve, not necessarily a super comfortable income, but it was still an income and I was living at home. So I was fortunate to be able to save a lot. And then from there, like I said, it just kind of kept evolving and I kept figuring out different ways to utilize it. But I mean, at that time it was only Instagram and it was only photos and it was so different than now.
You know, you said you didn't start out with a business plan, but since it's evolved and you are making a living from it now, did you develop one and what does it look like now since you are much more structured?
Absolutely. So because of expanding platforms, there's all different facets, right? So there's, you know, back then it was just Instagram. So it was basically post a photo. Usually it had some sort of product in it. And then that company paid me. That was like the entire way that I could make an income. And so now it's very much more based upon revenue from ads that are within my videos. So like Facebook will put video ads into your videos. So will YouTube, so will TikTok, so it's like, that's probably the meat of it, is because of the volume of content that I'm able to put out, because there's just so much going on over here, then a lot of ad revenue comes in through just views. And so that's how I'm able to put out so much content that is free for an audience, is because them just watching it is what's paying me. And then we've branched out. So I have a merch store. I just recently started doing Snapchat, which is completely different. It's very unedited, very off the cuff, but they also insert ads. I didn't even know about that. I'm just live under a rock. So I had just been like off Snapchat for years and didn't even realize. And so I started that earlier this year as well, and that's really took off. Then we've also incorporated some brand deals still. We have subscription set up so that people can actually pay monthly for extra content. Yeah. So there, and then there's just little affiliate links here and there. So there's probably like 7 or 8 different alleyways that lead into like the one pool.
Yeah. So it's really diversified now.
And that's the goal. I have too much anxiety to only have like one stream going.
We talk about that a lot, though. It's a lot of people, you know, especially when you have a business like with clients or an agency, for example, like you don't want one big client that,
right?
If that client leaves, or, you know, then your business is gone.
Right.
And I see it the same way with you, that if something's not working, you know, right, you don't want to start from scratch again.
Well, and, you know, for instance, with TikTok, when we thought it was going away, everyone's freaking out. They're going to lose their house. They're going to lose their entire income. And honestly, I was like, I mean, that sucks because I really like their editing platform. But other than that, due to, there's has to be like a glitch with my TikTok or something where I make like hardly anything off of my views. So I have it turned off most of the time, and I just use it for like brand deals and things like that. And, you know, just building my brand awareness. But I was like, well, that's on y'all for not spreading out. I mean, you know, there's all different kinds of social media platforms, and I don't generally do specific content per platform. So, you know, whatever I post on TikTok, it's getting posted on Instagram and on Facebook and on YouTube Shorts. And then YouTube does get its own videos, but that's because it's long form. Mm-hmm. And then Snapchat is just day-to-day stuff. So, you know, you can definitely utilize the same content and put as, I wouldn't say as little effort, but you can be efficient with your effort for sure.
Yeah, I was going to ask that as, you know, how do you have the time to post on all the different platforms? But if you're just doing one video.
I have hired someone that helps not too. On everything. And this has only been about this last 6 months, but I hired someone to help post on Instagram just because Instagram doesn't post a whole or pay a whole lot. And it just, I don't put my time and effort there as much. And so I just wanted to keep that platform going, though, just as like a fail safe and to have that backup for brand deals and things like that if for some reason video views go away. And so I did hire someone to repurpose my videos. Sometimes she'll edit them down to be a little shorter, but I'm the one doing the posting on Facebook and on TikTok. And she also does the same thing for YouTube Shorts. So she took over Instagram and YouTube Shorts. My production team posts on YouTube, but I approve everything. And then I'm the one running Facebook and TikTok. Mm. And Snapchat. But I have hired someone to start helping me take content throughout the day while I'm taking content for everything else. They're taking behind the scenes content for Snapchat. So it's like a, like on days where I'm just working, there'll probably be like 70 or 80 Snapchats. But when she's working, we get up to like 100 and something. So.
Wow, that's a lot. I actually just heard that you're on Snapchat, and I've been hearing more and more about businesses getting on Snapchat. And
yeah.
It's just like, it's so intriguing to me because I wouldn't expect that to be a platform that people would go to.
Well, and it honestly, out of all the platforms, it pays very well for what you put into it. But, and I'll say this, I think the way they're able to pay that well is because they have a really high threshold for getting approved. So on YouTube, I think you have to have 1,000 followers. On TikTok, you have to have about 10,000 followers, which on TikTok, I would say, I think it's probably the easiest platform to get followers. On, I think on Facebook, you have to have 10,000 followers, but also like 600,000 watch hours in a month, you know, something like that. But on Snapchat, you have to have 50,000 followers and you have to have 25 million views within a 28-day period. And you have to like post a certain amount as well. Like it's kind of a difficult milestone to hit before mm-hmm. they'll approve you. So I think that's why they're able to pay a lot, because it's a little less attainable.
Yep. Less people that they're paying out to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Now, you do all this social media stuff, but you also have a whole other business with breeding horses and mm-hmm. cattle. And so can you talk about that part of your business?
Yeah. So that has, so raising horses and selling them and cattle, that's always been a part of my life because that's what my parents did as I grew up. And it was never their sole income, but it was something that, you know, helped with horse showing, or it was something that was more passion driven than, you know, income driven. And so it's been a goal of mine over the last few years to really find ways to turn our passion profitable. And so the cattle are profitable just because, you know, livestock that are consumable and, you know, aren't necessarily like a 30-year commitment. They're just going to be a little easier to make profit from. We have a seed stock herd. So we raise registered Simmental cattle. The majority of our cattle, I would say, sell to be breeding cows or herd bulls. And so we're not necessarily in the meat market as much. But that is, you know, that could possibly be something we would like to grow into. We just don't have the land or capacity at the moment. And so because we are limited to a certain quantity, we try to just keep upping our quality. And so then we have the ability to pull in, just the same as horses, pull embryos, collect our bulls, things like that, and sell that way since we are limited on space. And then with our horses, you know, definitely social media has been what has allowed that piece to be profitable because, you know, we're able to share so much content about the behind the scenes of breeding and about foaling and about the journey of that foal as it goes into training and showing. And I'm so still new into it that we're really only seeing my oldest foal crop that you're seeing that like was born on social media and is showing now. They are four. So they're still rather young. They're still really young. And so now through social media, I was able to expand into the stallion ownership part of things. And so I purchased VS Code Red, who, you know, breeds a really substantial amount of mares per year. And then I invested in a young stallion that we are now watching his journey as he goes into the show pen, and we bred a few mares this year. So again, diversifying and trying to diversify away from social media. So not everything is wrapped up in social media being the main income. So, you know, we're not necessarily at a point where I have outside income that rivals the social media income, but that's probably the goal overall. Yeah. I think whenever I see people on social media that are truly successful in business, it's because they are utilizing social media to fund their outside business, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then using the outside business for content.
Yeah, exactly.
On social media. Yeah,
exactly. They feed each other.
What has surprised you the most about running your own business?
Okay. This is going to be maybe a controversial answer. Growing up, I think I had a lot of self-doubt. And I think what surprised me the most about running a business is that I'm good at it. I don't think I ever expected myself to be good at managing anything. Because I think growing up and in college and in high school and, you know, things like that, I was a very disorganized person, kind of like chaotic, anxiety ridden. And so I think if I had asked myself 10 years ago if I would be running a business, having employees, being, you know, the head person that is answering the questions and that is making the decisions and that is formulating ideas that then turn into business models, I don't think I could have believed you. And so I think the biggest shock of my life is that I'm good at this job. And that's, I know that's probably not like the answer that you'd expect, but like, I'm shocked.
I think amazing. It's great though.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's cool that you've discovered that about yourself.
Yeah. And so I think I can get pretty hyper-focused on certain things, and I can get hyper-focused on horses, number one thing. And, you know, once I think I'm a very goal-driven person, but I can get pretty tunnel visioned. But in this case, those attributes work.
Right.
Yeah. That's amazing.
And what's been surprisingly easy in the business for you?
The content creation is pretty easy for me. So like just going out and not always, you know, there's going to be days where it's harder than others. But over the years, I feel like I've developed my own kind of style with it. And so just sharing what's going on is very just, it comes to me, right? And so like the other day we were sitting in our Airbnb, we were on a trip and I had to do a voiceover. And I like put some clips together and then just started speaking. And so one of my producers, he was like, "You just did that in one take?" I'm like, "Yeah, I just talk." And he was just like, "That's insane." And so I think my ability to ramble and just ramble, start a sentence, not knowing where it's going to go, like not knowing where the sentence is going to go, but then just finding a way to finish it. I think that's that's probably what makes things easy.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Because for me, I mean, I think I'm sitting here days ago thinking about the questions we were going to ask you. And I'm like, and how am I going to say this? And what am I going to do? And what? And then I get halfway through and I'm like, oh my God, did I say that right? Does that sound stupid? All right, I'm just going to keep going. But,
but you know, yeah. Sometimes I got to do a second take. But generally speaking, I can't like, and I think because of the style of content that I've molded my channel into. People just expect it not to be super clean cut. And, I just talk and there's a couple ums in there, but I just keep talking. And so, but I think because I wouldn't say I've had a lower standard for that, but I think because of the content that I've gotten people used to, it makes content creation a little easier because then it's not perfect all the time.
Yeah. But I think people probably appreciate that it's genuine.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. And also like all the different things that you have going on. So it's really funny because I go into New York City to get my hair done and my hairdresser lives in Brooklyn and is a huge fan of yours. And every time I go in, that's all she wants to talk about is all the videos and the content that you've created. And I asked her, because I said, oh, I think I'm having her come on the podcast. And she was like, oh my God, well, you have to tell her that she has fans in Brooklyn. And the reason why we love it is because it's so different from the lifestyle that we live. And, you know, we feel like we're part of it while we're, you know, and we're in there with it. So it's...
Well,
it's
I love hearing that because that has been like a bit of a mission with the content. So obviously we want it to be entertaining, but the educational aspect and it not always being boring educational, but just sliding in educational facts or videos in and trying to create an entertaining background to the education it's a part of the mission. And so getting it out there to people who've never had the opportunity to learn about livestock or horse showing or, you know, just animal ownership, care of animals, things like that. And not everyone has had the blessed opportunity to be on a farm or in the presence of these animals. And so I think it's an important thing to share that. And so I appreciate you telling me that because that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It is funny because I grew up on a farm in upstate New York and we had mostly horses, but we had the random cow or the pig that they always seemed to get loose when my dad was out of town and my mom had to deal with it.
Yeah.
And she wasn't super excited about that. But it's when you grow up in it, you don't realize the people that don't have access to it.
Absolutely.
And how much they appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realize what isn't common knowledge. And right. So I try to keep it, you know, sometimes the comments will get nasty and I'm like, don't talk to people like they should know this stuff. Yes, it might be common sense to those who grew up on a farm, but let them ask questions and let me answer them or make a video answering it, because obviously this isn't something that's taught to mainstream schools or something that's just common knowledge to those that didn't grow up on a farm. So let's make it an educational space instead of like a gatekeeping community. Exactly. Let's not keep it away from people.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we had the random duck in our kitchen for a while that got eaten by a fox. My duck. Yeah, he had like a damaged leg and my dad brought it in. And now I'm like, oh man, we should have had social media back then because that would have been really interesting content.
Right. Oh my gosh. The stuff that we've had over the years where I'm like, oh my gosh, if I had been videoing then, or if I had even taken a picture of that, that would have been insane. Just because of the experience that, I mean, back then it's like, oh, you tell your friends about it, but that's about it. You can't really share it. There's no ways to share it with people. So,
yeah.
Well, at least you're kind of normalizing the way I grew up now, because for people who don't know what it's like to live on a farm.
Right.
I appreciate that because people were like, what? You had a potbelly pig in your kitchen? It lived in your bathroom? I'm like, yeah.
And that's why when I started social media, I wasn't even in the equestrian space. I was more so posting about my like outdoor passions. So me and my husband had just started dating and we hunt a lot. And so we, you know, love to spread knowledge about wildlife conservation and about hunting and about, like, you know, we'll cook what we eat or what we hunt and we'll share that and, you know, things like that. And so for the first 2 to 3 years, I really only shared that due to the fact that, like you said, it wasn't normalized and people thought it was weird. And so I had grown up with people thinking I was the weird horse girl and that me like having baby horses was weird. Like I can remember going to high school and people being like, no one wants to hear about this, Katie. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. And so I never talked about it anymore. And in college, I really, like I would show my horses and I'd go to a horse show, but that wasn't like a big piece of my personality because it had been drilled into me that no one wanted to hear about it. And so when I started social media, that was the same thing. I'm like, no one wants to hear about this. So we still had horses. We still had cows. I was still helping my dad run cows through the chute. And I was still helping, you know, at the barn and cleaning stalls and all the things, but no one knew about it because I wasn't posting about it. But then with TikTok in 2021, I think they hate the hunting videos and they hate all that good stuff. And so I really couldn't share that. And I was like, well, like maybe I'll make a video just introducing people to my horses. And so I made a video just going through and being like, here's my horses. I think I had 3 mares due. That was my biggest crop of mares that I had ever like bred myself and was planning on foaling myself. So it was a new journey for me. And, you know, all throughout my life, my mom had really been the one heading up the breeding part of it. And, you know, I was always there for the foaling, but I wasn't in control of it. It was always her mares. And so I had bought a mare myself. And then I had her old show mare and then like a project mare that I had bought that we couldn't keep sound. And so we were like, okay, we'll do this. And so I had 3 mares. And yeah, it was just wild how fast it took off when I started sharing that. And then I was like, because I had mentioned, oh yeah, this one's pregnant. And it was in December. And we were going to have babies in like 2 or 3 months. And then after that, people were asking questions. So I was just using their questions to make videos. And then, you know, I was probably doing like 1 or 2 videos a day back then, not even every day probably. And then it just grew from there on how to best utilize my time. I look back at those videos, I'm like, oh my gosh, these are so dumb. Or these are, you know, I was doing like the funny little sounds. Or I look back at how I spoke into the camera and it was so choppy. And, you know, so it was definitely the start of a different path. And then it's just evolved from there. So, yeah.
What was your first video that went viral?
So, you know, depending on what you want to call viral, I remember I had a video on TikTok that probably got me a lot of followers, which was me bathing one of my pregnant mares right before she foaled. And I put like some funny voiceover stuff to it. And that one got like 4 million views or something like that. And so then I got a lot of followers that went into foaling season. But my truly, truly viral video was in 2020. I believe on face. No, no, no. Year was it? Maybe it was 2020. It was on Facebook. And I can't remember what year. I posted a video somewhere around 2020, 2021, something like that, where it was like a full 13 minute video where there was like no cuts or anything. I hadn't edited it. There was nothing. One of our mares was foaling and she was having a really hard time. And it took us quite a long time to help her foal. And so it was like my dad and my husband and like we were all in there trying to help her. And it was a maiden mare. And I posted that video of the entirety of it. Like it was just like a long whole video. Again, no editing. And it got like 195 million views.
Wow.
Yeah, it was insane. It was my mare Ethel having her first baby. So that went crazy. I think I got 500,000 followers in like a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so. They're from all over the world, right?
Yeah. And that's the crazy part. I've met some really cool people that are from everywhere from social media.
And what did it feel like when that happened?
Well, that was a weird one because it wasn't necessarily positive. There was a lot of negativity in the comments. And so it was interesting because it was like, oh, I'm really excited. I'm getting a lot of followers. I'm getting a lot of views. I was not monetized back then. So 192 million views for free. That would have equated a lot of money these days, but that has never happened again. So it was weird because it was like, I'd never thought of Facebook as the platform to be posting things. Like I would just kind of like whatever went on Instagram automatically got posted to Facebook. I didn't really spend a lot of individual time there. And now I would say that's my main focus. So it was definitely a shift.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you have a secret sauce to creating the content now?
I don't know. I definitely have. Yeah, I definitely would say I have like an order of things that I go about. And I think if you watch long enough that you'll figure out kind of like the order of things with when a foal is born, when we're on foal watch, if there's a new animal, and being able to utilize that content to the fullest and being able to maximize, you know, the reach of that content. And so, yeah, I think I do have an order of things now, but I think it's also ever evolving because things change. What I was doing last year is not what I'm doing this year, just because, you know, Facebook, I would say, changed the way it was monetized. And then I didn't have Snapchat that year. And then I'm really pushing YouTube this year. And then, oh, we're doing this now on subscriptions. So it's just, yeah, it's always ever evolving. So there is probably an order of things. But yeah, I don't think it's ever an order for long enough for it to be a secret sauce necessarily, just because it changes constantly.
Are you always thinking about videoing?
And yeah. And that's the hard part. Once you get into it, it's hard to get out of it, but you have to get your mindset into like, I got to video that, because that's what I hear mostly from people. I'm like, ah, you should have posted about that. And they're like, well, I didn't video it. And I'm like, you have to, when something starts happening, you have to have like a trigger point in your brain where you're like, get your phone out and video. And you just have to be like that when you're a content creator, or you won't have the content. And so it's also hard though, because when you're trying to just be with your family, or when you're trying to just hang out and experience something, your brain's being like, you should video this or make a content out of it. And so you have to like figure out how to turn that off.
Yeah.
And how do you kind of like delegate time to all the parts of all the different parts of your business when you're constantly kind of thinking about creating content? Like, with your
so stallion. I would say my like daily job is getting those 8 videos on TikTok and Facebook per day, a couple of photos on Facebook per day, and then making sure I get my like Snapchat quota. That's like the daily, that is like my job during the day. So
okay.
To have time for that, I do have like a business manager. And so she'll be like, hey, I need you to film this ad on this day, or I need you to make time for this week. Same thing for on YouTube. So we film, we post 3 YouTube videos a day. I'm so sorry, week. 3 YouTube videos per week. We are trying to have at least 1 ad per week in those YouTube videos that we film that's like a commercial. We've just started doing that. So then she'll be like, hey, I need y'all to film this week. And we have to get it in for approval. So there's probably 1 to 2 days a week where half or more of the day is spent for YouTube, and we try to knock a lot of stuff out at once.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to like be efficient with our time for that. And then, yeah, I mean, honestly, if I told you that like I had a normal work schedule, I'd be lying. I would say I start my stuff around 9 in the morning, and then I'm not really done until 9 or 10 o'clock at night. So it's not feasible. Like it's not something that I would recommend doing mentally. But I'm also, like I said earlier, I have too much anxiety, and I have too much I'm probably a little too much of a control freak. And so I'm always like, okay, well, I need to utilize this now while I have it, you know? And so I just try to put as much into it as I can. But at some point, you know, hopefully the goal is to have more income streams that are outside of social media, to have a safety net of things like that in place, to where I don't have to work from 9 to 9 or whatever every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have to constantly think about content.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you have a team of people behind you. Like, what does that consist of?
I do. I think I have 20 employees.
Oh, wow.
That's and they're a lot. They're not all for social media, but they all go into social media, because to have the amount of horses I have to have people I trust taking care of them, and to have all of the projects getting done that I need done to expand, I have to have, you know, a crew working on fencing, a crew working on, you know, baling hay, on fixing equipment, on working cows, you know, things like that. And so I would say it's me, Jonathan, my mom and dad are very hands-on. But then we have two guys that work on the farm that, again, do kind of more like doing the hay, taking care of the cows, taking care of like farm maintenance type stuff. And then my husband has a crew of three guys that at one point he had his own excavation company, his own like hardscaping company. And that's what they did with him. And now due to the fact of like my side of the business growing so much, they've pulled off of doing other people's jobs and basically do stuff for me every day. And so then I have my personal assistant who helps me with Snapchat, helps me with admin stuff, just filming literally everything throughout the day. I have my business manager, but she and her husband, they like build out my website. They maintain my website. They help with merch launches and the curation of products and things like that. She also does all of the like back and forth with brands and all the communication and things like that. I have Nate and Matt who are both, they do my videography and photography for YouTube. I now have Danny who does the posting for YouTube, and she's been doing a lot of the production side of YouTube and then Instagram. And then I have a couple customer service girls for my merch store. I have a couple of girls that just manage email and like behind the scenes stuff. And then in the barn, we have four full-time employees and a couple of part-timers that like swap in and out. So,
wow. That's a big team. How did you know when you needed to transition to get that big of a team? Or has it been gone ages?
It's just grown. So, at one point there was only two people in the barn. And then because we just have so many more babies and so many more horses, and I've been trying to up my care of my horses. So there's always someone at the barn needing help. So like we have the PEMF lady come out. We have the massage therapist lady come out. We're getting acupuncture on a few of them. The vet's constantly out because it's breeding season. The farrier's always there in stages because we have so many that he can't do them all in one day. So the, you know, and so there's just, it's just grown. And luckily it's grown at a rate where I feel like it's been a really good transition, and it didn't go from 0 to 100. It's been over 8 years, you know?
Yeah. And how many horses and animals do you have now?
On the property, there's over 150 animals,
wow.
But that's counting cows. I would say there's about 80 animals that are in like the horse barn and on the mini farm and like, you know, daily touched, you know?
Yeah.
And then I have a few that are in training. So.
Okay. That aren't with you.
Yes. Yes. So only a few, I think only have four that are not on property.
Right.
And do you have a public stable, or is this all just private for you?
It's private. Unfortunately, it would be a whole different ballgame to try to open it up to the public. So yeah. it's all private.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you do the goats and the mini horses for fun, or is that also part of the business plan?
So that it's both. So with anything, again, on social media, I try to be an educator, but also an entertainer, and getting people that wouldn't normally love goats into loving goats, wouldn't normally think, oh, miniature horses are athletes, into noticing, oh, no, they can be very well bred and they can go on and be a show horse. And what you think of when you think of miniature horse sometimes is usually a dwarf horse that might have some problems, but you can have a very structurally sound miniature horse, you know? So I think I like to utilize the couple of miniature births that I have per year as educational purposes. It's cute. It's entertaining. It lures people in that normally wouldn't want the knowledge of livestock, but then it might spark a love. It might spark the need to educate their children on it. It might, you know, expand that knowledge to the masses. And so while my miniature horses are very, they're show quality. You know, I tried to source the highest quality like mares that I could. And so I found them at a farm in Ocala, Florida. The owner of them is a stallion owner that I know. He owns my stallion's brother. And so we kind of got that hookup. And so I have the ability to breed to some really nice stallions and things like that. And so their babies are show quality babies that if I keep, I'll probably have someone show them for me and kind of show that as well, because I think, you know, they're a part of the equestrian community as well, even though they can't be ridden. And I think there's a lot of good uses for those that maybe can't ride anymore or don't necessarily have the space for a large horse or don't have the physical ability to do it. And I think that's a way for them to get into the equestrian community. And I don't think it's, you know, shown as much. And so there's little passion projects behind all of them, right? But then there's also just the educational and entertainment factor of them. So,
yeah, I love that because there are so many different things in the equine industry that I think people outside of the industry have no idea about or how they can get involved, you know, from driving horses to the miniatures, you know, across all the different disciplines. I think it's often funny when I talk to people, they're surprised at how many different things go on in the equine industry. And even being in the equine industry, when you start looking throughout it yourself and you're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that like the Arabian community has this and this and this. And, you know, the quarter horses, they do this. And then, you know, there's all these spinoffs. So I think that's really cool that you're showing that to not just the outside world, but also in the equine industry.
And it's been a really cool thing because not all of these animals have I had a lifelong experience with. And so I think people appreciate when you are sharing your journey that you share it from a relatable standpoint of like, I'm new to this too. I'm learning along the way. Please, you know, tell me if y'all have experience, what have you had experience with this? And creating a community rather than just preaching at people or saying, oh, I know everything, do what I do. And so with the horses and the cattle side of things, I definitely have more knowledge than on the mini side of things. And I think it's important to always be like, I'm learning every day. Here's something I learned today, or here's something that we're doing different, you know, things like that. But with the minis, it was something I've always just wanted to do. And then I was like, let's figure out a way to kind of just spread goodness with it. And so like, if I'm going to do it, let's do it right. Let's get, you know, high quality mares or whatever. And then let's do something good with it. And I'm like, you know what? This is a fantastic avenue for so many people that probably don't even know it exists. So,
yeah. And with such a huge amount of followers and such an engaged community, you know, I feel like that is such a big part of social media that a lot of people don't talk about. You know, everybody talks about content creation, but they don't talk about the other side of it and keeping those people engaged and, you know, whether it's like, you know, checking and answering DMs and answering comments and all of that part of it is really time consuming. And I was wondering, like, do you feel intimidated by the number of people that follow you and how do you deal with that huge of a community, especially if you're asking questions like, you know, how do you do this? Or you want people's feedback.
I do spend a lot of time in the comments. And the one thing that's hard to get across to people, because I do have some people that get angry, like I've commented this and, you know, you've never seen it or never messaged me back. And I'm like, well, I'd need you to understand that I get 2 million comments a month. So and that's not joking. Like that's an actual figure. And so I physically cannot read them all. I have other people that I've hired that help like comment back to common questions or that help, you know, like comments and comb through and block people that are being nasty and, you know, delete some that are nasty comments or whatever. And so I think the most frustrating part of it is I'm not really overwhelmed by the comments. I really wish there was a better way to create a safer spot for comments because there are those nasty people that it's like their mission in life to be hateful in comments and create problems. And so the unfortunate part is I will go watch a video and like comb through the comments and things like that at first and block the first people that I can see, but then that video might still accumulate comments for months or even come up for later. Yeah. And I can't unfortunately police all of that. And I wish I could. I really do, because it is like my heart and soul mission to create like an equestrian community that is like spreading knowledge and just spreading the love of the horse and opening it up to more people and like being the opposite of gatekeeping. But it's just impossible. It truly is.
Well, hopefully with AI, maybe that'll help.
There's got to be a way for AI to help people like you or even across platforms to start getting rid of.
And I do have some keywords that I put in that, will help some of those comments. But at the same time, some keywords I can't put in there because some I don't shy away from legitimate questions or legitimate, debate. Legitimate, let's bring this up, thought-provoking, things like that. Absolutely. It's when it's done hatefully or when it's done so aggressively that it's like, okay, that doesn't need to be happening. That's not educating anyone. That's not benefiting anyone. But it's just really difficult. That's probably like my number one stress is that.
Yeah. And it's hard too with the content that you're making and trying to be so open about it. Like I saw one about the goats and showing their actual, like how they're getting soft and how they're getting ready to foal. And, not everybody on the internet appreciates that kind of stuff. I worked at a breeding farm. Do you know how many times I went to the airport with a box of semen that had to be shipped out and it says semen on the side and people are like, oh my God.
Right. I don't even think of semen and stuff like that as like a taboo word to say out in public. And it's just like, we'll be at dinner and I'll just start talking about stud stuff and I'll, talk about semen and motility and da 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 da. And like, I was about to say something about that I just realized that is not something to talk about on this podcast. And so I'm like, and again, it's just like, it's something that isn't like dirty or like sexualized or, whatever, but it's not common. It's not something that everyone thinks about or talks about.
No. Yeah. So my in-laws are not horse people at all. They live on Long Island. And one time I had to go to Long Island to drop off frozen semen to ship to Europe. And I went to my in-law's house to have my father-in-law go with me because I had no idea. It was like near JFK. I'm not a city person. So all the traffic, I was intimidated. So he took me to do it. And then we went to dinner that night with my husband's sister and everybody. And he's like, do you know what we did today? We went and dropped off frozen horse semen. And then everybody was like, whoa, like, don't say that word. We don't need to have that discussion. And I was like, well, I mean, it's literally my job.
Right, yeah, right.
And guess how we get it.
And sometimes I think I get in my own bubble, making content about it because I'm like, oh, these people want to know about it. So it's like it's a community of people that are expecting to hear semen. They're expecting to hear that a vulva is softening. They're, they're expecting that. But then I'm in real life public meeting people or like making friends or we're at a wedding or whatever. And it doesn't even occur to me not to talk about that.
Right. Yeah.
That's great. But I think that's what people love about it. Love about, your content is that it is so real, but amazing. Are there things that you keep private in your life?
Absolutely. I'll show my husband on camera sometimes or whatever, but I would say our marriage is pretty private. I would say, I do see content creators for content, they'll be like, well, this is something we're arguing about right now, or this is whatever, da, da, da. And that is just something you will never catch me doing. I will never be, airing out something that is between me and my husband on social media. I think that is just like a sacred thing. And so I might tell y'all everything about my horse's vulva or about whatever, but if it's my marriage or if it's something like we might be in an argument that day and I'm just in stitches over something, but like that's not going to be something that is told, And so, I think the one thing that I will keep absolutely private is my marriage. When I have children one day, while they're just like little like potatoes, probably not. But once they start having like recognizable features, like, no. people already get too attached to my animals. I'm not having them attached to my children.
Yeah.
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 Totally. And has your idea of success shifted since becoming a more successful influencer?
You know, I wouldn't say it's shifted totally, because I think this is something that I was just raised to believe as well. But it's definitely become more of the forefront of like, what, how can I utilize all this amazing, all this amazing thing, all these amazing things that are coming my way? How can I utilize this to not, like, I don't want to be alone at the top, right? Like, I don't want to get somewhere and be at like the peak of my success, but like, I only did it for myself. And so, like, I think I'm just absolutely blessed to be able to share that with people and like help others have full-time careers, like helping me along the way and opening up jobs that way, opening up opportunities for others that way. And again, not gatekeeping like how to get there, or not gatekeeping all that goes into it, because I think it would be an absolutely boring world if like you're just doing something really cool and then you never share it with anybody. So mm-hmm. I think this, the success, like, yes, absolutely. Being able to pay for everything at the farm is amazing. Being able to expand my business is amazing. But I think the true success is being able to like help others along the way and be truly a difference within a community, an organization, and like bring goodness to the world in some way. And so like, it is a goal of mine in like, not just the AQHA community, but, you know, just like the equestrian community as a whole, to, in the long run, have a positive impact and to just be good, right? And so I think that's really what success is.
Awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Sounds similar to what we try to do as well with Equestrian Businesswomen. So at the end of each episode, we ask the same four questions to our guests, and Connor starts with the first.
What is your unfair advantage over others?
I think in my specific situation that I grew up in the passion that I have now. So I didn't have to just go from scratch, and that I definitely had a leg up in that way. And I had parents that knew what they were doing and then built off of that. And so that was definitely an advantage.
And what is something worth fighting for, and what is something worth giving up?
Your passion is worth fighting for, because you only have one life to live. And so you like absolutely fight for your passions in life, but then you might have to give up your time a bit to fight for that passion.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really true. What has been your favorite age so far?
Right now, 28. I'm going to turn 29 in like 2 days. So maybe 29 next year, but right now, 28.
Well, happy birthday. A little yeah. early. That's good. I think we find a lot of people say that too. Like yes. the age that they're at is,
yeah.
is a good age. I think as you grow.
It's hard, but it's my favorite. I wouldn't want to go back to any other age. Mm.
And who would you recommend as a guest for this podcast?
I think Dr. Tina Urbini would be an absolutely fantastic equine veterinary professional to have on here. She has been exceptionally helpful throughout treating one of my horses at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And ever since then, she has been bending over backwards to help spread education and give content to spread on my page, deep diving into horse care. And I just think she does a fantastic job. And over the last year, she has been a wealth of knowledge. And I think she does great things at the University of Tennessee. So I think she'd be a fantastic person to have on the podcast.
And I agree with you. I think that would be amazing.
Cool.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you and learning more about what you do, and really fun to talk about content and all of your business.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great time.
I really enjoyed talking to Katie. I did not follow her on social media. I do now. But you were the one who introduced me to her pages. And yeah, I really enjoyed speaking with her. I think she's really refreshing in, you know, how she talks about producing her content, and she's very businesslike about it. And it was cool to hear, you know, how she started, she, you know, how she lays out her day, even, you know, and how, what she produces per day and per week and what platforms. And I honestly, I mean, I know she says she does it for like 12 hours every day, which makes sense because I don't, it's got to be so time consuming doing all of that and having 150 animals on her farm.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know how she does it all. Yeah, well, she does it all because she's 28, but it sounds exhausting to me.
Yeah, definitely. At 46 sounds like I need a nap after the first part of the day. Yeah, for sure. But no, I appreciate that she wants to educate people, and I appreciate how she does it too. It's so kind. And like she said, people can be so mean, but her response is so good to educate, and not just about the equine world, but also about the cattle, about, I mean, she does cooking segments on her social media. She talks about hunting and kind of sustainability type of stuff. Like it's very, like you said, refreshing, but educational, and that she's able to create it into a business and be so business minded throughout it.
Yeah. And to see how much she's grown and to be able to bring so many people into her orbit and provide jobs for 20 people. That's amazing. That's a really, really cool thing to be able to do at this point in her career. Because and that social media was what afforded her that opportunity. Because, you know, if she were just breeding horses or just breeding cattle, like she may not have that opportunity. She may not have that many animals. You know, she'd be working in the barn every day, just doing the horses and the cattle herself, and maybe wouldn't be able to do as much as she does. So I think it's cool that she's really thinking ahead as well and diversifying her business.
That's impressive. So impressive.
Really thinking about, you know, what am I going to do in the future? How am I going to make it so that I don't have to rely on social media for the rest of my life? And I really loved how she has that plan.
I think it's a good lesson for everybody to think about how you can diversify yourself in the life that you're living right now, right? Yeah. And I mean, everybody laughs at me because I do so many different things, but I do that with purpose. And like she was talking about passion, there are so many things that I'm passionate about. And if I'm able to combine those, it doesn't really feel like a bunch of extra work. It just feels like you're living life. Yeah. And so, you know, I would love to encourage people to kind of listen to what she was saying in diversifying, you know, whether that means like, yes, you're a trainer and that's what you do, but, you know, maybe also braid horses, maybe also look outside of things, get your insurance license. You know, there be, we've had people on that have, talked about like doing assessments and stuff. Like there's, if you can diversify yourself, then it helps you know that, okay, I have a plan B. If my job were to end tomorrow, you know, I have this. It's not just, oh, well, I'm going to go work for the next person. Right. Right.
Yep. Yeah. I loved that part of the conversation. And I also really appreciated her mindset that she wants to show what she does to people who may have never had the opportunity to
see animals or, you know, been around horses before, mm-hmm. and to explain what it is to take care of livestock. Because I think that's true. You know, there's so many people living in an urban environment that have never seen a horse in real life before. I mean, we saw it a lot when we had the Washington International Horse Show in downtown DC,
right.
and we had the horses stabled on the street, and yep. we'd have people coming by that were absolutely shocked to see a real live horse.
Yeah.
And they got to pet a real live horse.
Yeah.
I mean, they never would have done that in their lives otherwise. And
yes.
I love that she's showing that and maybe, you know, making it seem attainable for other people. So I really loved that, you know, she doesn't want to gatekeep information and opportunity, and that she wants to help others. So that really stood out to me.
Yeah. I also found it very interesting when she was talking about how she didn't post horse content at first.
Yeah.
And I really related with the weird horse girl thing, right?
Yes, me too.
And I was like, oh my God, I could totally understand, you know, where, I was going to say something to her like, hey, how many times did your parents show up at school with a horse trailer? And people be like, what is happening? I mean, hey, at least I grew up in farm country where, I mean, that wasn't completely abnormal, but, and everybody was thinking, well, it was a horse trailer, not a cow trailer.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, no, it was interesting because I was like, well, yeah, because people are like, oh, you're the weird horse girl. And so, then being shocked that like the horse stuff is kind of like what took off. So
yeah,
I think that is really cool. But I have to go be a weird horse girl for the rest of the day. So you can find the links to today's guest and the show notes at www.eqbusinesswomen.com. Equestrian B2B is out twice a month on the 1st and the 15th.
You can find out more at eqbusinesswomen.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Find Equestrian B2B wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review.
Now go open the gates for others.